Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. Before we begin today's exposition, I'd like to remind you about my new website, which is different from the radio website. It's called jimandrewsbooks.com, and there you will find all my books, including Polishing God's Monuments, Pillars of Hope for Punishing Times, which combines biographical narrative and theological insight about suffering. Another book, Dispatches from the Front Lines, The Glory and Grind of Pastoral Ministry, is for pastors and lay leaders alike. That's jimandrewsbooks.com. And now, our current study. We continue our exposition of Paul's first epistle to Timothy. It's called a pastoral epistle because Timothy was a protege of the Apostle Paul, and he wrote to him as an acting pastor of the church at Ephesus in Western Asia Minor in order to give him guidance about correcting certain issues that were there, including shutting down false teachers, but also showing him how to conduct himself and have others conduct themselves in the house of God. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15. In this particular chapter, Paul is giving Timothy instruction and counsel about the appointment of church leaders or church elders. Keep in mind that the church at Ephesus was not a one-site church. It was not some great big mega church where thousands of people came together. As I explained in our last study, we know that in these big cities, Jerusalem, Corinth, Rome, Ephesus, there were no church buildings in those days. There were later, but there were not at this time. People met in homes, and you find many references to that. I cited it in the last study, and you can go to the archives and listen to that. These would have to have leaders, and these leaders would be either called, depending on the day and the time, they'd be called elders or shepherds. Shepherds means pastors. The Greek word was poimen. In Latin, it became pastor and carried over into English. They're one and the same, or overseers. And so Timothy there in Ephesus was more than just an acting pastor. He was, you might say, the first son of a bishop, the first among equals, and would have to appoint leaders for these various house churches. And Paul is telling Timothy what these guys need to look like. He's not talking about what we traditionally refer to as lay elders. So many times we go in, and it's not a bad thing. We go in, we look at these things, and we're going to vote up or vote down elders for our churches, lay elders. Well, it's good if they can approach these standards, but these are really the standards for pastors. Now, some would take issue with that, but I made my case in the last study, and you could go to that on the archives. I have an unpublished paper that I'd be willing to give any who ask on this very issue. There's a lot of confusion about church polity, in my judgment. I've written about that. And a lot of it gets us into some trouble, but there's certainly nothing wrong with anybody who's being a church leader being asked to step up and to be the kind of model that is expressed here in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and following. I was saying, then we'll get right into the text, that over the years I've noticed in the evaluation of elder candidates, and here I mean your typical lay elder, as we traditionally have them today, a tendency to apply a mechanical standard to elder credentials. I've seen people use this catalog of qualification as a kind of microscope, and in so doing, they disqualify some good, very credible men, right and left, because under the unforgiving, all-telling eye of a speck-revealing microscope, oops, they detect some blemish, not all that evident to the normal eye. And in this mode of evaluation, We often miss the apostle's point. We miss the big picture. We miss the spirit of it. And I'll explain that shortly. A nitpicking, legalistic measure narrows the candidates down to a pool, so small, I said, that one could hardly ever fill the pulpits of our churches, much less a lay elder board with perfect fits. So we should note that this list of qualifications is somewhat informal, a bit off the cuff. We know that because it varies in some particulars from the ones in Titus, another pastoral epistle. And that, I think, is telling. This catalog is about vetting out those with leprosy, not vetting out everybody that has a few pimples. I'll explain myself more fully on that point in a moment. So starting in chapter 3, verse 1, Paul says, here is a trustworthy saying. Whoever aspires to be an overseer desires a noble task. That saying was apparently in fashion around churches in those days. This is the second of three appearances of this preamble. It's a trustworthy statement laid out before an important principle. It suggests a reiteration of principles familiar to both Paul and Timothy from some source. Paul ratifies its significance. He puts his apostolic seal of approval upon this statement as trustworthy. The particular word of wisdom commended aspiration to the elder office. It says, the work of shepherding God's people is really a noble thing. It's a fine work. To aspire to do it is noble. It's not a vain ambition if one is wanting to do it in the spirit that one ought to do it. It's noble because rightly understood and rightly undertaken, the work of a pastor or a shepherd or an overseer, use all three terms I've emphasized, refer to the same office. It's not living for ourselves, but the work of a pastor, a shepherd, or an overseer is living for others. The office is not aimed at building a name for ourselves, a power base, but it's aimed at building a name for Christ. It's not about power, it's about a towel. It's indeed a noble work, and those who would enter into this office are obliged to present a spirit, capital S, shaped character, and the God-given credentials to match it. So Paul is telling Timothy, who is acting in the apostles' behalf as a more or less bishop at Ephesus, to carefully vet all comers. He's telling Timothy, son, make sure when men present themselves for this office that they fill the suit. Now, for any who missed my exposition on the latter half of chapter 2, I keep saying men. In these days and times, we've gotten very careless and very reckless, and we've gotten very politically correct, some have, in the wake of the Women's Lib movement, which has spilled over into our churches and radicalized some Christian women. And consequently, we've inserted women into the elder office where they absolutely do not belong. My hat's off to women. We could not get along without them in the home or in the church. I have two daughters. They're both very smart. They're both very competent, as is my wife. But God ordained women for one work. He did not ordain them for elder work. It's not because they are not good. It's not because they are not exceedingly capable. It's just that in the toolbox in God's plan, He intended men to be leaders of His spiritual work. He did not intend for women to lead men in the work of God in the Church of Jesus Christ. So that's why I keep saying men, in case that hits anybody. Strange. 60 years ago, 50 years ago, it never would have. But in the environment we live in today, to some people, it may sound quaint. As Paul begins to catalog the attributes one should seek for in elders or pastors, I emphasize again, he's not talking about lay elders. He's talking about pastors, because the leaders of these house churches were what we call pastors or overseers. We should notice at the outset the overarching qualification that all the subsets are aimed at verifying. I want you to notice the first and the last qualifications in verses 2 and verses 7. In verse 2, it says, now this is a noble office. This is an office rightly understood and rightly entered into. It's a noble work. But if anybody's going to do it, they need to be, verse 2, above reproach. Now that's the overarching qualification. And notice again in verse 7, the qualifications are framed by these two, above reproach, and must have a good reputation with those outside the church. Now listen to me. I submit to you, my listeners, that these two framing credentials are the big picture. When you go into your church and you're looking at a pastor, you're looking at one who's going to shepherd your church, who's going to be your overseer. What you want to make sure of is that they're people that are above reproach and they have a good reputation outside. All those in between are there to help Timothy or anyone else of us charged with evaluating people for fitness to help us assess whether or not these persons who offer to be shepherds of the church are indeed fit. That is, whether they are indeed irreproachable men to those inside and credible to those outside. So, this is the spirit of it. This is the big picture. Paul says to Timothy, my son, it's a really good work. It's not a vainglorious work, rightly understood and rightly entered into. It's not about power. It's about Christ. So if anybody's going to step up for this work, then make sure they're without reproach. That's the big deal. That's the big picture. Make sure that they're credible to people on the outside. They're without reproach to the people on the inside. And you can imagine Timothy saying, okay, now how do we begin to assess that in spiritual terms? My father, Paul, you say without reproach, you say credible. What do you have in mind? Do you begin to get the spirit of this? Paul says, well, first of all, make sure they're the husband of one wife. Now, this requirement has always been debated by biblical scholars for good reason. If you take it at face value, it would exclude from office a great saint who had been remarried after his spouse had died, if you just take it in literalistic terms. Since we know that it's perfectly legitimate for a believer to be married to another after his wife has died, to be married to another believer, then we know that would not affect one's credibility as a servant of God. So that's not the right interpretation. Well, if we see that it is not intended to be taken strictly at the letter, then one has to ask, if it cannot mean simply that one wife ever, are there other exceptions that still fall within the spirit of it? When he says the husband of one wife, Timothy might ask, did he mean one wife since he had become a believer? Again, that would exclude the remarried widower, if taken with strict literalness. So it can exclude that. Or does the apostle assume some common sense? Does the apostle assume Timothy would know not to press his stipulation to exclude those situations? It's hard to say for certain just exactly what he meant, but I'm personally most comfortable with a familiar interpretation that's agreeable to Paul's overarching interest. And what's that overarching interest? That they be without reproach. I believe what he's saying is that church leaders who are irreproachable, trustworthy, and credible, and when it comes to the married estate, he would require that elders be tried and true husbands. Some have put it this way, a one-woman kind of guy, not a bigamist, not a polygamist, and not a serial marrier. The key here is a history of rigorous domestic fidelity. That's what fits with without reproach. You want a leader without reproach. And so when Paul says the husband of one wife, what he's getting at is a history of rigorous domestic fidelity. One of the great church fathers, John Chrysostom, Bishop of Constantinople, way back in 347 to 405 A.D., said, this he does not lay down as a rule, as if the elder or pastor must be not without one wife, but as prohibiting his having more than one. For even the Jews were allowed to contract second marriages, and even to have two wives at one time, bigamy. Chrysostom saying, that's not to be the habit of church leaders. Rigorous domestic fidelity is the standard. He also says that a pastor, an elder, an overseer, ought to be one who is temperate. The Greek word used here equals sober. The word comes from a verb form, pronounced nepho. That word connotes being free from every form of mental and spiritual drunkenness. That means somebody who's not characterized by excess, by passion, by rashness, by confusion. Or to put it another way, it must be somebody who's well-balanced, self-controlled. What does it mean to be without reproach and to have credibility with those without? Well, he adds, they ought to be prudent, sophron. Prudent in the sense of people who are thoughtful, as opposed to rash, and ought to be people who are self-possessed, rather than the slave of unruly emotions. You see people who are otherwise good people in a lot of ways, but somehow they're just ruled by emotions. A pastor, an elder, just can't afford to be. You'll soon lose respect. A pastor, if he's going to be without reproach and be credible to those on the outside, he says he must be respectable. The Greek is kosmios, honorable. In the classical Greek, this adjective meant well-ordered, regular, moderate when being used of a thing, and when being used of persons meant orderly, well-behaved, and decorous. Well, you can see those three terms that Paul uses, temperate, prudent, respectable. They all kind of run in a circle there. You begin to get the idea. You can see the personality through those lenses. You can see the character. Though those three previous attributes differ in their nuances, temperate, prudent, respectable, I'm saying one gains a kind of mental profile of the kind of person they're getting at. Paul says the church leader ought to be without reproach, have credibility to those on the outside. And what's that look like? Well, he says they ought to be the kind who are temperate, prudent, respectable. That is, not people who are emotionally unstable, who are ruled by their feelings rather than facts, people who lack self-discipline and consistent decorum in social intercourse. Well, those folk need to be led. They don't need to be leaders. Christian leaders, pastors, shepherds, overseers, they need to be the kind of people who have a reputation for being steady, sturdy, stable, and sensible. That's the kind of thing you want to look at. You've got somebody who just doesn't fill those shoes, steady, sturdy, stable, sensible. Well, I say again, that's a person who needs to be led. They don't need to be leaders. Paul also says that those who are without reproach, those who have a good reputation without, ought to be people who are characterized as being hospitable, a friend of the stranger. In other words, they ought to be the kind of people who are compassionate, who always reach out to those in need, and where necessary, offer food and shelter. In our day, that spirit of hospitality can be manifested in reaching out to strangers coming to the church, rather than comfortably cocooning with those we know and ignoring the rest. This quality, hospitable, is a badge of other-centeredness. That's what it's getting at. And looking at the needs of others and not just considering one's own needs. He also says that the elder, the pastor, ought to be able to teach. The idea here is not so much skills in the mechanics of teaching. Those don't hurt. But the emphasis is on his command of the truth. If someone is going to be without reproach and going to have credibility without, he needs to have a sufficient fund of Christian knowledge, of biblical understanding, that he's capable of instructing the immature and correcting the erring. And right there, not a lot of lay elders fit the bill. Some do, but not a lot. Unfortunately, a lot of pastors are not able to teach in that sense. They lack a sufficient fund of knowledge that they can instruct the immature and correct the erring. It's unbelievable, but that's what we've come to. Pastor, an elder, an overseer should be one who is not addicted to wine. That'll certainly bring one into reproach. In other words, Paul's saying luscious need not apply. Now, the spirit of this stipulation would exclude persons caught up in any other so-called addiction that would imperil good judgment or self-control and become a reproach on the gospel and a scandal in the community. As in our day, alcoholic excess was a huge social vice in that time. He also must not be violent, but be gentle, not quarrelsome. The NASB says not pugnacious. The last thing you need in a church leader, a pastor, an elder, a shepherd, the last thing you need is a hot-headed redneck who is ready to take quick offense and in the habit of trying to settle disputes with his fists. These are people who tend to be ruled by their emotions rather than by reason. They will quickly bring themselves as well as their church into disrepute. You just can't afford to have that. A lot of good guys out there, a lot of them, and have many great qualities. But boy, again, that person needs to be led. They do not need to be a leader. What they need to be is gentle and uncontentious. He doesn't mean the wimpish gentleness of the weak, but he means the kind, the yielding, the uncontentious spirit of the strong. In other words, the kind of gentleness that does not make a fight when there doesn't need to be one. He means a person who has a spirit that's not intent on having its way, not a spirit that won't step aside. He means a spirit that'll let others have their way if it's for the greater good. What he's talking about is the gentleness of a domesticated lion rather than the gentleness of a lamb, which is by nature weak and easily frightened. Then he says, an elder, a shepherd, an overseer of the church ought to be a person, Timothy. They've got to be without reproach. They've got to have a good reputation without. He frames at the top, it frames at the end. That big picture idea, he's giving Timothy some indications of what it means to be without reproach, what that looks like, to have credibility without. He said if they're going to have that, they really need to be people who manage their own household well and keep their children under control with dignity. Here's the idea. The home is a good laboratory for testing a man's ability to manage the church of God. Paul notes that in verse 5. Both the home and the church share the character of a family in many ways. In the church, the elder or pastor or overseer functions in relation to its members like a father, except that the church is a much larger family. Well, if a guy can't manage a small family of wife and children, how's it likely he can manage a church family? And that's what being an elder, an overseer, a pastor involves. Now, this does not imply that in order to serve as a pastor or elder, one's obliged to have children. That's pressing the blood out of the spirit of the text. Rather, it simply tacitly acknowledges that most men who would be up for this office will be family men. And of course, in the case of those who never had children, like Paul, it's obviously impossible to apply this standard as a test of pastoral fitness. And then he emphasizes he must not be a new convert, lest he become conceited. Anytime people rise too quickly in an organization, they achieve prematurely what passes for success in any field. There are exceptions, but it tends to go to their heads. When that happens, they become arrogant. They become swelled heads, and they become intolerable know-it-alls, and they're not without reproach and don't have credibility with those without. In ordinary secular vocations, a very competent, conceited jackal may indeed be a prodigy of sorts, and they may keep on succeeding in that line of work and rise to the top at a very early age. And although people around them may not be able to stand the individual, most will concede his or her skills. They may even endure their overbearing sense of self-importance because, as much as they hate to admit it, those people do produce results and they make other people money, which is the only currency that matters to those who promote them. However, the work of a shepherd disallows that sort of pride and conceit. We'll come back to this thought in our next study. Thank you, dear friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.